We've been out of the Gospel of Matthew chapter 6. We've been looking at the Lord's Prayer for the past several weeks. We're looking at each clause of the Lord's Prayer. Today we're going to be looking at verse 12. Forgive us our debts. The other places or has forgive us our trespasses, as we have forgiven those who trespass against us, here as we also have forgiven our debtors. I've titled my message today, Prayer and Forgiveness. But I also want to read a verse out of Matthew chapter 24 and verse 12. Jesus is talking to his disciples about the end of days. In verse 12, it says, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved, and his gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. But because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. I believe that one of those things that people will lose with the increase of wickedness in our world, and is mainly through crimes on persons, but it also includes the negative and bad things that people will experience, is the ability to forgive. If you and I will look at 2016, we can see that in our world and our nation, there's been a lot of things that have been going on. There's been shootings, there's been terrorist attacks. I mean, if we just look back just, 3 or 4 months ago, we will see that in Dallas, 5 police officers were gunned down. Orlando, of course, we have the 49 people that were killed. San Bernardino, we had 14 people that were killed. You and I see it nightly where there is police abuse of power killing innocent people. But then also on the flip side, then you have riots of people against police officers. You and I are very much aware of the unrest in the Middle East, Syria, Iraq, Palestine, Israel. But then you come a little bit closer, you will see that even in our own nation that you have betrayal of faith, betrayal of trust in our government officials through corruption. You have slander of people's reputations, theft of property, human trafficking of people into the sex trade. And the effects of these events is that they are destroying people's trust and hope in a better future. There is an increasingly the hardening of people's hearts. There is increasing social isolation where people are withdrawing from community. We can see that people are increasingly engaged in revenge, paybacks. And then ultimately, there is a disillusionment with life. Now, today's message on prayer and forgiveness is as relevant today as it was in the day of Jesus. You see, sin or trespasses that we commit against God and against other people and other people against us, it affects our relationship with God. Because when you and I experience injustice caused by other people or the injustice that we do to someone else, people usually develop bitterness, grudges, and a hardness of heart. And this hinders our relationship with God. Unforgiveness always leads to personal torment. It affects you and I emotionally. We lose our peace of mind and spirit. It has a way of hardening our hearts where we want to have revenge, and it poisons our hearts with bitterness. I'd like to focus on forgiveness based on that clause, forgive us. We are asking God to forgive us, just as we forgive other people who have done something wrong to us. I want to look at forgiveness as a process. I want to look at forgiveness as an act of my will. And I want to look at forgiveness as an extension of our own forgiveness from God. I want to read it's a story. It's called a fable. But I think it's relevant to what we're looking at today. It is called The Magic Eyes. In the village of Falken, in innermost Friesland, there lived a long, thin baker named Fuke. He was a righteous man with a long, thin chin and a long, thin nose. Fuke was so upright that he seemed to spray righteousness from his thin lips over everyone who came near him. So the people of Falken preferred to stay away. Now, Fuke's wife was different. She was short. She was round. Her arms were round. Her bosoms were round. Her rump was round. Hilda did not keep people at bay with righteousness. Her soft roundness seemed to invite them instead to come close to her in order to share the warm cheer of her open heart. Hilda respected her husband and loved him too as much as he allowed her, but her heart ached for something more from him than his worthy righteousness. And there in a bed of her need lay the seed of sadness. One morning, having worked since dawn to knead his dough from the ovens, Fuke came home and found a stranger in his bedroom lying with Hilda's. Hilda's adultery soon became the talk of the tavern and the scandal of the Falken congregation. Everyone assumed that Fuke would cast Hilda out of his house, so righteous was he. But he surprised everyone by keeping Hilda his wife, saying he forgave her as the good book said he should. But in his heart of hearts, however, Fuke could not forgive Hilda for bringing shame to his name. Whenever he thought about her, his feelings toward her were angry and hard. He despised her, and when he came right down to it, he hated her for betraying him, as he had been so good and so faithful husband to her. He only pretended to forgive Hilda so that he could punish her with his righteous mercy. But Fuke's fakery did not sit well in heaven. So each time that Fuke would feel his secret hate toward Hilda, an angel came to him and dropped a small pebble, hardly the size of a shirt button, into Fuke's heart. Each time a pebble dropped, Fuke would feel a stab of pain like the pain he felt the moment he came on Hilda. Thus he hated her the more. His hate brought him pain, and his pain made him hate. The pebbles multiplied, and Fuke's heart grew very heavy with the weight of them, so heavy that the top half of his body bent forward so far that he had to strain his neck upward in order to see straight ahead. Weary with hate, Fuke began to wish he were dead. The angel who dropped the pebbles into his heart came to Fuke one night and told him how he could be healed of his hurt. "There was one remedy," he said, "only one, for the hurt of a wounded heart. Fuke would need the miracle of the magic eyes. He would need eyes that could look back to the beginning of his hurt and see his Hilda not as a wife who betrayed him, but as a weak woman who needed him. Only a new way of looking at these things through the magic eyes could heal the hurt flowing from the wounds of yesterday." Fuke protested. "Nothing can change the past," he said. "Hilda is guilty, a fact that not even an angel can change." "Yes, poor hurting man, you are right," the angel said. "You cannot change the past. You can only heal the hurt that comes to you from the past. And you can only heal it only with the vision of the magic eyes." "And how can I get these magic eyes?" pouted Fuke. "Only ask, desiring as you ask, and they will be given you. And each time you see Hilda through your new eyes, one pebble will be lifted from your aching heart." Fuke could not ask at once, for he had grown to love his hatred. But the pain of his heart finally drove him to want and to ask for the magic eyes that the angel had promised. So he asked, and the angel gave. Soon Hilda began to change in front of Fuke's eyes wonderfully and mysteriously. He began to see her as a needy woman who loved him instead of a wicked woman who betrayed him. The angel kept his promise. He lifted the pebbles from Fuke's heart one by one. Though it took a long time to take them all away, Fuke gradually felt his heart grow lighter. He began to walk straight again, and somehow his nose and his chin seemed less thin and sharp than before. He invited Hilda to come into his heart again, and she came. And together they began again a journey into their second season of humble joy. I shared this little fable because I think that this fable kind of sheds light on what you and I experience when we experience something that somebody does to us, and then we get hurt, and then we come into that hardness of heart and that bitterness that we have within us. I'd like for us to take a look at the Old Testament and Genesis 27. You and I are going to look at a biblical family that lived thousands of years ago. The Bible does not hide the faults of this family. Actually, the Bible brings out the dynamics, the workings, the inner workings of this family for you and I. The Apostle Paul says that the things that were written long ago are written for our admonition. In other words, that you and I are to look at people's lives and that we are to learn from what they went through, what they've experienced. And we are to apply those lessons to our lives today. Now, I want you to remember, we are looking at forgiveness. I'm going to be looking at a family because I think most things occur within families. Or maybe just relationships. But a lot of it is just families. And then I'm going to apply it to my own personal life. Because if I were to ask you, have you ever had something done to you that has hurt you so deeply that you react in hate towards another person? I think we all have been there, whether we like to say it or not, but we all have. And so we're going to take a look at forgiveness as a process. But then we're going to take a look at, because when you look in the New Testament, Jesus brings out through parables about forgiveness. Take a look in Genesis chapter 27. And I'm not going to read all of the verses, but I will read select verses. But we are looking at the family of Isaac and Rebecca. This Isaac is Abraham's son. Rebecca is Isaac's wife. They have two children. One is called Esau and one is called Jacob. When you look in chapter 27, actually you could even go back several chapters back and you'll see where it all begins. Now, when we're in chapter 27, Isaac is about in his 80s. Esau and Jacob are about in their 40s. Now, the scripture says that Esau was an outdoor person. He loved hunting. He's one of those individuals that you would think today that would be dressed in camouflage and wearing a hunter's hat and things. He would be a person who probably would have a truck and would have, you know, a gun rack in the back of his truck. He was a person who would probably have a knife, little knife pouch at his side. He liked to go game hunting. And he brings his killings from whatever animals that he kills, he brings it home and he makes this stew that his father loves. But then you got Jacob, who is totally opposite. The Bible says that he was a quiet man. His temperament was so opposite of his brother that he was a man who lived in tents. He was a quiet man. And so we could look at that Esau was a daddy's boy and Jacob was a mama's boy. But you have to remember the seeds were already planted long ago. And I personally blame the parents, because the father showed favoritism towards Esau, the older son, and the mother showed favoritism towards the younger one. Whenever you have parents who show favoritisms among their children, you are only sowing seeds of discord. It will come back and bite you, I can surely tell you. When you have a child, from a child's perspective, when he sees his father who favors another child over them, what do you think that does to a person? It causes jealousy. It may even cause, it would cause anger. It would cause doubt whether you are loved by that person, by your father in this case. And so we have these dynamics that are going on. And little do the parents know that they are setting up the brothers for what is called sibling rivalry. They are competing against one another for their parents' love. They want to be noticed. They want to be cared for. They want to be loved. And when they see that they are shown, they are treated differently than another person, than their brother, it causes them hurt. And it sets the two brothers up against each other. Do you know what can you relate to what I'm saying? It happens every day in most families. Now, there is, because sometimes one child will have a temperament, will have an interest that will be like one of the parents. And because they have a shared interest, they have a shared way of looking at things, they naturally bond more. They agree more. And then you have another child who has totally opposite, differing personality, differing interests, differing likes, differing way of looking at things. And so you naturally clash. And so you become closer to the one that you are more have in common with. It happens all the time. I'm not saying that it's right, but it happens. These two boys, this is what is behind the scene that's going on. And so Jacob, let me go back. In biblical time, here in the Middle East, in biblical times, we're talking about thousands of years ago. We're talking like thousands of years ago, more than probably 6,000 years ago, when this family lived. And their custom, the oldest son is the one who will inherit the family's inheritance. It is the older one who will receive twice as much as the other children. It is the oldest one who will carry on the family's name. He will become the leader of that family and carry on that name. And in this particular case, with this particular family, because of Abraham, the covenant, the blessings of God through the covenant that God had with Abraham has been passed to Isaac, and from Isaac it will pass on to his children. Jacob is schooled by the mother. The mother behind the scenes is what we would call a schemer. You know what a schemer is? It is a person who plans behind the scenes, who plans things to happen. She is the one who overheard her husband Isaac tell her older son Esau, go out and to kill an animal, make the stew that I love, and I will pass on the family blessing to you. She hears this. And so she goes and tells her other son, Jacob, that I will make the stew that your father loves, but you better put on some fur on your arm, because the Bible says that you are let me just say it this way. Esau was a hairy person, the Bible says. Now, some people are more hairy than others. Esau was one of those hairy persons. If you took off his shirt, he'd have hair all over him. Probably have hair all over his back. Hair, just, it'd be like a, you know, like an animal almost in a sense. But Jacob was the opposite. He was clear skin, clean skin. He didn't have a lot of hair. And he tells his mother, he says, Mom, if I go in to him with the stew, first of all, he's going to recognize my voice, and he's going to touch, because the Bible says that his eyes were becoming, we would say in our day he was legally blind. Maybe not blind totally, but legally blind. And he would feel me. And the Bible does say that when he did go in, he said, come here, let me touch you. And he felt. Because that's how he could recognize this thing between the two sons. But you see, he put on some hair from animals on his arms. And his father, okay, so it passed off. And the mother says, I want you to go in because he's going to give you the blessing. Well, Jacob had ripped off his brother on the birthright before. Now he's going to rip him off on his blessing, and he does. Which brings me to forgiveness as a process. The first stage of forgiveness is hurt. When somebody causes you pain so deep and unfair, it is like a wound we feel deep inside. This is the first stage of forgiveness. Now, when you look at verse 33 through 38 of Genesis chapter 27, matter of fact, let me start with verse 30. After Isaac finished blessing him and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father. Then he said to him, my father, sit up and eat some of the game so that you may give me your blessing. His father Isaac asked him, who are you? I am your son, he answered, your firstborn Esau. Isaac trembled violently and said, who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came and I blessed him. And indeed, he will be blessed. When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me too, my father. But he said, your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing. Esau said, isn't he rightly named Jacob? It means deceiver. His name means deceiver. He has deceived me these two times. He took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing. Then he asked, haven't you reserved any blessing for me? Isaac answered Esau, I have made him lord over you and have made all his relatives his servants, and I have sustained him with grain and new wine. So what can I possibly do for you, my son? Esau said to his father, do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father. Then Esau wept out loud. His father Isaac answered him, your dwelling will be away from the earth's richness, away from the dew of heaven above. You will live by the sword and you will serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you will throw his yoke off your neck. Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are near. then I will kill my brother Jacob. When Rebekah was told what her older son Esau had said, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, your brother Esau is consoling himself with the thought of killing you. Now then, my son, do what I say. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him for a while until your brother's fury subsides. When your brother is no longer angry with you and forgets what you did to him, I'll send word for you to come back from there. Why should I lose both of you in one day? Then Rebekah said to Isaac, I'm disgusted with living because of these Hittite women. If Jacob takes a wife from among the women of this land, the Hittite women like these, and my life will not be worth living. So Isaac called for Jacob, blessed him, and commanded him, do not marry a Canaanite woman. Go at once to Paddan Haran, to the house of your mother's father, Bethuel. Take a wife for yourself there from among the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and increase your numbers until you become a community of peoples. May he give you and your descendants the blessing given to Abraham so that you may take possession of the land where you now live as an alien. The land God gave to Abraham. Then Isaac sent Jacob on his way, and he went to Paddan Haran to Laban's son, of Bethuel the Arminian, the brother of Rebekah, who was the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now Esau learned that Isaac had blessed Jacob and had sent him to Paddan Aram, which is in present-day Iraq, to take a wife from there, and that when he blessed him, he commanded him, do not marry a Canaanite woman. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. Esau then realized how displeasing the Canaanite women were to his father Isaac. So he went to Ishmael, which is his uncle, and married Mahalath, the sister of Naboth, and daughter of Ishmael, son of Abraham, in addition to the wives he already had. Now, this is a true story. This whole deal could be a TV miniseries. But it happens every day. In verse 33 to 38, when we said that the first stage of forgiveness is hate, and usually our hate, the first stage is hurt, and it has three dimensions. It is personal pain, meaning that it happens to you. When it happens to somebody else, it's removed from you. You may feel sorry, you may have sympathy, but it didn't happen to you. But when it happens to you, it is different because it happened to you. And our hurt is unfair pain. Because, you see, we believe that we don't deserve that. We think that it is intentional. But sometimes it's not intentional. But we think so. No, they meant that. They meant to say that. She said it because she knew what it was going, what it meant to me. She knows. Somebody tells a person, "Well, maybe they didn't really mean to do that." No. They knew what they were doing. They knew exactly what they were doing. They did it on purpose. And it is deep pain. Sometimes our pain are deeper than others, depending on the relationship and the circumstances. There are some things that people say, something that people do, it bounces off our back. We just keep on going our way. But then there are some things that happen to us. It doesn't bounce off. It is a stab to the heart. And we feel it. I told you I'm going to intermix between a biblical family we could look at, but then we're going to mix it with what is very personal. You know, in 1996, I had gotten out of the Navy. I was a chaplain in the Navy. And I remember, as I was preparing to get out of the Navy and come back to San Antonio, I remember going through Tokyo. And I remember staying with a missionary couple on my way back to the States. And when I stayed with this missionary couple, they had like another kind of a separate room from their house. They had the church that was connected there. And I remember one night very clearly, God said to me, "Don't go back home and just make a living, but believe me to open a door of ministry for you." Very clear. Okay. I had a word from God, had some direction. I came back. I visited with because I was Assembly to God, their church government, how things are set up. In a way, we had what is called a sectional presbyter. And this sectional presbyter is basically, he doesn't govern what goes on in churches, but he's there to kind of give guidance if you need and things of this sort. And so I met with him. I never met him before. He didn't know who I was. I had been gone for a long time, for many years. I told him that, you know, I'm Assemblies of God chaplain. I'm returning back here to San Antonio, and I'm looking at ministry. You know, what kind of opportunities are. And so he said to me, "Well, I'll tell you what. Our church is wanting to start another church, and so come to our church, be here for about a year, develop a relationship with the people, and then we'll send you all out, and we'll send people with you to start a new church." Okay, sounded good to me. Got out, came back, and then he said, "Hey, I'd like for you to preach at this church over here." Okay, I went to go preach over there. And what had happened was that the pastor at that church had taken all the money and took off and just left the people like that. And, of course, people left and everything. Just a little handful of people left behind. So I preached there. He told me, "Well, go ahead and go preach again." And so I kept preaching as he asked me to. And then he asked me, he says, "Hey, well, what do you think?" And he said, "Well, what do you mean? What do you think?" "Well, I mean, there's an opportunity there. Or we could do what we talked about." So I prayed about it, and I said, "Well, I felt that this was a more urgent need and that these were people without a shepherd." And so I said, "Okay, I'll go in and we'll try to rebuild." Okay, so that's what we did. So I met with what's called the sectional leadership, which is made up of 5 area pastors. And so they said that, "Okay, we will review where you're at in 2 years, and then we'll see what's going on." I'm going to try and make this story shorter, okay? What it came down to was this. About 18 months had gone by. We were a small, little Hispanic congregation in the middle of a Jewish Anglo neighborhood. We were like a sore thumb, you know? And so time was coming up. I met with the sectional presbyter, and he said, "Well, you know, okay, how things are going and this and that, whatever." He goes, "I'll tell you what, come back in 2 more weeks and we'll talk some more." Okay, came back in 2 more weeks. At that meeting, this is what he said. "There's another church who's going to sell their church, and they're going to move into your church, and you're out." I was shocked. I have heard about those things, but I've never experienced any of those things. And so that is what happened. So when he talks about the first stage of hurt, I felt betrayed by this denominational presbyter who was basically over, talking about a lot of different pastors and churches. And then this sectional committee was made up of five area pastors. And if I were to name one of them, you would know what church I am talking about, one of the largest Assembly of God churches here in San Antonio. And their reason for what they said was this. Well, you're a small little church. We don't know if y'all are even going to make it. So if y'all don't make it, we're going to be stuck with having to pay, you know, for the bills and everything else. Well, there's this other church. They got a whole lot more people. And so, they're going to come in and they're going to take over. And when I looked at that, it was a backroom deal that they made about me and our church and our people. Now, I can tell you this. People react to hurtful experiences in different ways. Some people withdraw and isolate themselves. In other words, they stay away. Others will get angry and they'll lash out and they'll want some kind of revenge or bitterness or something. They want some kind of payback. But they all want the other person to feel what you felt. You see, we're in the second stage, which is called hate. In chapter 27, verse 41 through 45, you see, you cannot shake the memory of how much you were hurt. You cannot wish the other person well. You sometimes want the other person to hurt, to suffer as you have suffered. In verse 41, it says, Esau held a grudge. A grudge is a feeling of resentment, ill will, bitterness, a feeling and thoughts of doing harm back to a person. He says, I will kill my brother. That is revenge. Verse 44, the mother says, his fury, his rage. Verse 45, your brother's anger. You see, I was shocked. I was stunned. I couldn't think through what I should have done at the time. I should have said, no, that's not right. And I should have went to what's called the district superintendent, which was in Houston, and said, hey, let me tell you what's going on, and this is wrong. I had never been in that position before. I had been in the military as a chaplain, totally different. I didn't know the politics of the churches and things, how things run, the politics. And I had no idea that I probably could have appealed it and appealed to the superintendent to overturn this, and this was wrong. But I can tell you this. I could not think good of these people, and these were pastors. Every time I thought about them, anger would come up with inside me. And I could not reconcile how God could bless these pastors in these churches. And these are churches that had a lot of people and all. I couldn't. How can God bless these pastors and for what they do, for what they did? I could understand that. And after being in ministry for a long time, many years, I felt lost. I felt like I was put out to pastor. I felt that these people did not care about me. They didn't care about the church. And I was angry. Now, we as Christians don't like to say that we hate. Okay? Then intense dislike. intense dislike, but I can tell you, it all comes back to hatred. It really is. I hated these people. I hated these pastors for what they did to me. I felt betrayed by them, and I just could not understand how God could use these people. That is exactly how Esau felt by his brother, betrayed. But not only by his brother, he felt betrayed by his mother, who instigated the whole thing. You know, the nerve of this mother, Rebekah, telling her son, he said, "Man, your brother is so mad at you. He wants to kill you for what you have done to him." Like if she is so innocent. She is the one who told her son to do these things. Now, I'm not saying that Jacob is innocent either. But it's like she's over here like, you know, like, "I had nothing to do with this." When she had everything to do with it. And Esau was not only angry at his brother, he was angry at his mother and his father, because his father did not have a blessing for him. And when the scripture says, he realized that his mom and dad did not like Hittite, Canaanite women, the women of the land. When he found that out, I said, "Okay, man, this is how I'm going to get back to you. This is how I'm going to pay you back. I can't hurt you, mom and dad, but I'm going to pay you back. I'm going to marry your brother," which is her dad, your brother Ishmael. "I'm going to marry in one of them," which they are Canaanite, Hittite people. "I'm going to marry him because you don't like these kind of gals. So that's how I'm going to pay you back. But my brother, that's a different story. I'm going to kill him. But I'm going to do it when my dad dies. I'm going to do it when my dad dies." And the mother says, "You know what? I think you better take off. You better go. You better leave. You better go to your uncle's house, to my brother's, and you go live with them." So here we have Jacob, who's on the run. In a sense, he's like a fugitive. He takes off. You know, it happens all the time. We'll have some people who will come and visit the church, and we'll ask them, "Well, you know, where are you from?" "Oh, I'm from California." "Oh, okay, did you move here?" "Well, yeah, I'm living with my sister or whatever, this and that." "Oh, well, okay, what brought you down here?" "Well, my family sent me down here because I'm getting in all kind of trouble over there, you know." Or they'll have some kind of story like that. And Jacob goes, and he goes, and he lives with his uncle. He marries two of the cousins. We'll talk about that a little later. But the third stage is healing. We move from hurt to hate to healing. You see, you become healed as you choose to release and forgive. Now Jacob is hiding out in a different country. He's hiding out with his relatives. And the Bible is silent. It is silent from this on, from Jacob and Esau, about the whole incident. Jacob lives for 14 years with his uncle. And his uncle now begins to betray him. And begins to get angry with him. But when you look in the New Testament, forgiveness, as it relates to you and I as Christians, in Colossians chapter 3, verse 3, it says that we are to forgive as God has forgiven us. In Matthew chapter 18, verse 21 through 35, Forgiveness is not a matter of feeling. It is a choice. It is a choosing to obey God and when it comes to forgiveness. There is a book that has tremendously helped me, and I lend it out from people time to time. It is by an author called Lewis Smeans, and the book is titled Forgive and Forget. And in that book, he says that people usually forgive, they forgive slowly, a little at a time. You see, people have to work through it. They have to process it. So forgiveness takes time. It comes slowly. Because you see, all in your mind, you know, you're asking questions. You're asking, well, why did they do that to me? Why did they say that? Why did they do that to me? What did I do to them? I didn't do nothing to them, but why did they do that to me? I don't deserve it. I mean, why? You're trying to understand why. He says that people forgive with a little understanding. You see, we don't know all the whys. We don't have all the answers. All we know is what we feel. He says that people forgive with the feeling of anger left over. You know, we think that we forgive when we don't feel the hate anymore. We think that we have forgiven when we don't feel it, we don't think about it. It doesn't bother us anymore. When we don't feel these things, oh, I've forgiven. That's not true. You see, it happened to you, and you have felt it. It is recorded in your mind. It is felt in your heart. That experience will never leave you. But it does mean it doesn't have to control you anymore. You know, there are times I'm going to talk about in a great big moon that I'll think about what happened to me. But I don't think on it too long. I think it comes and then it goes. You know, for 2 years, this happened. We came to this church in 1996, and this happened in 1998. And for 2 years, I tried to get over that wound in my heart. But I couldn't shake it off. Nothing that I tried worked. Nobody could help me. And here I am as a pastor, without a church, and what I have counseled with people, countless people on issues of forgiveness, and here I am going through it myself, and I couldn't even help myself. Well, I had gotten a call from the Bible college that I had attended. One of the professors called me and said, hey, you know, we got a teacher who's going to Oral Roberts to get their master's. We need a teacher for the year. Would you be willing to do that? I said, sure. I came to that Bible college to teach for that 1 year. And I was what is called a wounded healer. I was wounded. And yet I was teaching. At the end of that year, they had what is called an alumni convention. It is for a week long. Alumni who attended that school, they all have churches, they all have ministries, everything. They all come back at the end of the year, which is a missions convention, and they all preach to students, whatever. Well, I remember that night. That night was the last night of that convention. There was an old preacher who was in his 70s, probably late 70s. He preached that night. And he preached on Jeremiah, who was in the pit. He preached from the Bible in the Old Testament that here's Jeremiah the prophet. It was the time period before the Babylonian captivity, before Babylon, which is Iraq, was going to come and conquer their nation and take all their people as slaves and everything else. But it was just before that time. Here's Jeremiah the prophet in a pit that the king had put him in because Jeremiah was prophesying to the king and to the nation, you're going to fall. The nation is going to fall to Babylon because of your sinfulness. They didn't want to hear it, so they put him in this big pit. He's in this pit crying out, you know, somebody help me, whatever. And the Bible said this eunuch came by. You know what a eunuch is? Some of you are shaking your not in your head. A eunuch is a man who has been castrated, okay, and usually is in a harem setting, usually. And so this eunuch comes by. Here's Jeremiah crying out of the pit. He had sympathy. He had compassion. He helped them get out. This old preacher said, he said, many of you are like this eunuch. You've had injustices done to you. People have done things to you, whether you were as a child or a teenager or even as an adult. People have done things to you. And these are injustices. He said, this eunuch was first of all made a slave. He was castrated against his will. He had things done to him. And he said that this eunuch, he could be bitter. He could be angry. He said, when he saw Jeremiah, he said, you know what? Man, you got your problem. I got my problems. Tough luck. Didn't care, heart, didn't care about nobody. But he had compassion. He said he helped him out. And he said, there are people in this room, and he said, you have had things happen to you. And he said that you are like this Jeremiah. You're out, you're in a pit, and you can't get out. And he talked about the world, that they need to hear the message of forgiveness and of Christ. And he said that you are a patient. You know, like you're in a hospital, you got your patient clothes on. He said, you need to take this patient clothes off, put on your doctor's clothes and go out and heal. Anyway, he gave an invitation. He says, any of you who are dealing with the effects of injustices done to you, come to the altars. Well, I can tell you this, it registered with me. I came to the altar, and when I came to the altar, I presented myself before God. I said, God, you know what has happened to me. And you know I have struggled to get over this. And I can't get over it. It's there. It just won't leave. It's in my mind. It's in my heart. I can't get rid of it. But I presented myself to God, and all I can tell you is this. I felt the presence of God. And I felt His presence come over me. And all that I can tell you was that I knew I was healed. And I left that night, and I drove all the way home crying, because I knew I was healed. I knew I was healed. The last stage of forgiveness is the reestablishing of the relationship. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 33, verses 1 through 16. Jacob is in Iraq with his uncles. That relationship is going sour. And he tells his wife, we better pack up and leave because, man, things are going bad between me and your dad. We better get out of here. You know what? God had spoken to him in dreams and said, you need to go back home now. You need to go back home. But then he says, well, yeah, you want me to go back home, but I got my brother who's waiting there to kill me. But he had to obey. If you look in Genesis 22, you'll see where God comes to Jacob as an angel and he wrestles with him. But in chapter 33, during those 14 years that had passed, someplace, somewhere, at some time during those 14 years, Esau had forgiven Jacob. The Bible is silent about it, but I can only tell you this. Somehow, God had healed Esau's heart. Now, when Esau heard that Jacob was returning back, Esau was eager to reestablish that brother relationship. Look at Genesis 33, verse 1. Jacob looked up and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. He divided the children among Leah, which was his first wife, Rachel, his second wife, and the two maidservants who he had children with also. He put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. Who are these with you? He said. Jacob answered, they are the children God has graciously given your servant. Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all, Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, what do you mean by all these droves I met? You see, Jacob has sent all these animals as presents to appease his brother. To find favor in your eyes, my Lord, he said. But Esau said, I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. No, please, said Jacob, if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God, now that you have received me favorably. Please accept the present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need. Because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. Then Esau said, let us be on our way. I'll accompany you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are tender, and that I must care for the ewes and the cows that are nursing their young. If they are driven hard, just one day all animals will die. So let my Lord go on ahead of his servant while I move slowly along at the pace of the droves before me and all my children until I come to my Lord and say, here. Esau said, then let me leave some of my men with you. But why do that? Jacob asked. Just let me find favor in the eyes of my Lord. So that day Esau started on his way back to Seir. Jacob, however, went to Succoth, where he built a place for himself and made shelter for his livestock. That is why the place is called Succoth. Well, I can tell you this. Esau is the one who forgave. But what's really interesting to me is that Joseph is there, and he's a young boy. We all know what Joseph was going to go through by the betrayal of his brothers and the imprisonment in Egypt, and where God would lift him up and his family would come to him in Egypt and he would forgive his brothers what they did to him. What's interesting to me is that here's Jacob as a little boy. He sees his father and his uncle. They reconcile together. I wonder, during those years in prison in Egypt, that Jacob, if those flashbacks ever came back to him, realizing that what my father did to my uncle, and yet I saw my uncle forgive my father. I wonder if those things would ever come back to his mind during those 14 years. And I wonder if God ever used that picture of forgiveness to work in his heart to forgive his brothers when they betrayed him. You see, what also gets me is that his brother says, okay, I'll go on, and then you come follow. But Jacob, he takes off the other way. He didn't trust his brother. He accepted a forgiveness that was offered at the time, but I'm thinking, yeah, but you know what? He's only doing it as a show. But later on, he's going to kill me. He's going to betray me. He's going to kill me. So he takes off the other way. I wonder what, the Bible doesn't say, but I wonder what Esau thought. That chicken, that guy, that deceiver, that liar, he told me he was going to come, but he goes the other way. He takes off. You see, sometimes the relationship can be repaired. Sometimes it can. But sometimes it can't be repaired. Forgiveness is given. Okay? It's given. But sometimes the relationship will never be the same. It'll never be what it was before. And that's okay. That's okay. Like with these pastors, I have seen one of them in all these years, and this pastor acts like if nothing ever happened. Like if nothing ever happened. But I don't go and talk to him. I mean, I don't, I'll say hello and this and that, whatever, but that's about it. I don't trust them. You see, for you to put yourself back in a situation to get hurt again, to get treated like that again, no, I'm not going to do that. But it doesn't mean you haven't forgiven. Okay? It doesn't mean you haven't forgiven. All that I said was this. We forgive with anger, sometimes still left over. Sometimes we forgive slowly as we are able to forgive. But I am telling you this, as Christians, forgiveness is not, let me just say this, but unforgiveness is not an option. Some point in time, we have to settle that. We got to settle it. And I can tell you this from my own experience. Sometimes forgiveness is not easy. It is not easy. Sometimes it's very easy. Let me think about it. But sometimes it is hard. And during that time, I knew that if I was going to be a Christian, I knew that I had to forgive. But I just couldn't do it. It was hard. I tried, but it was stuck. I was stuck. And I think that God saw that I wanted to get rid of this. I just couldn't. I wasn't able to do it. So it took a divine intervention with God to heal me. But I think that he saw that I realized that if I'm going to be a Christian, then I can't have this unforgiveness. I can't. I got to get rid of this. And I think he saw that I wanted to, and so he helped me to. Now, I know there's just a few of us here. And You might have a story similar to mine, and not, you know, but in a just a little different context. Maybe you struggled with forgiveness. And maybe that it's kind of hard and you need help. Before we leave today, I'm going to ask that you, any of you who would like to come to the altar and do what I did, present yourself to God and ask God. Ask God to help you. Ask God to heal you. He's the only one that can. The altars are open.